how do you do, boys and girls? My name is Alfred Hitchcock, and I'm delighted to find that you believe in ghosts too. After all, they believe in you, so it is only common courtesy and politeness to return the favor. As a matter of fact, I tell them human stories all the time, and they enjoy them immensely. Now, of course, the best way to listen to ghost stories is with the lights out. There is nothing like a dark room to attract ghosts, and you may like to have some of our mutual friends come and listen with you. Are the lights out? Good. Doors closed, blinds drawn? Excellent. Don't worry about the ghosts getting in. They can slither through keyholes and under doors, you know. Now just be quiet. Hear that slithering? Ah, good. Now that we're all here, we can begin. First of all, let me say that I have always been curious about those things which makes the average person's blood run cold with fear and horror. But then the average person becomes upset over such simple things as a door opening, footsteps in the hall. An ordinary owl or cat. And they make such a fuss over simple things like the fluttering of a bird's wings. A girl's voice on a summer evening. Or for that matter, a dripping faucet as we seem to have here. But you and I are above these things. However, it might be best for me to get a wrench and turn that water off completely. While I'm doing that, why don't you listen to the first story, The Haunted and the Haunters, or The Pirate's Curse. It's about the housing shortage some years ago.
I had just arrived back in London with my family from a trip to India. It was the spring of 1894, as I recall, and the first job at hand was to find quarters for ourselves and our servant, a nice, agreeable chap named Alfred. After several days of touring the busy streets of London, I finally found a house that was unoccupied. Taking down the address of the owner, I went around to see him. He was delighted to see me, much too delighted, in fact. He said he would let me use the house rent-free for an entire year if I could move in immediately. Poor fellow had the idea the place was haunted. For my part, I was delighted and made plans to stay there that very night. I was pleased to find that Alfred was willing to join me in the little adventure. I sent him on ahead and ran around to our hotel to notify my wife of our good fortune and tell her I was spending the night in our new house. I reached the house, knocked, and my servant Alfred opened the door. He lit a candle, and we went to the rooms we were to occupy for the night. My bedroom was the largest. The four-poster bed was opposite the fireplace, and Alfred soon had a fire burning bright and clear. A door communicated with the small room that Alfred was to occupy, which had no other exit but that door leading to my bedroom. In the bureau, which rested near the bed, I found an old silk kerchief, a few odds and ends of female dress, and two faded letters tied round with a narrow ribbon of pale yellow. While I read them, Alfred opened a small box and removed a revolver and a dagger which I had ordered him to bring. One could never tell. Each letter consisted of one line. The first stated, "What's done can't be undone," and the second, "There's nothing against you unless the dead could come to life." In a shaky female hand had been written, "They can." It was then that I noticed on the outside envelope the words, "Lost at sea." I laid the letters on a table in the center of the room, stirred up the crackling fire, picked up a volume of Dickens, and read quietly enough until about 11:30. I told Alfred he might retire to his room. A few moments before midnight, I felt a sudden draft of cold air pass by my cheek. I fancied the door to my right had got open. But no, it was closed. I then looked to the left and saw the flame of the candles flicker violently. I sprang up and seized the revolver and the dagger. Then I heard three slow, loud, distinct knocks at the head of my bed. Suddenly, Alfred ran from his room. If ever I saw horror in the human face, it was then. He gasped in a hollow whisper that scarcely seemed to come from his lips. Run, run, it is after me. He ran to the landing and down the stairs, taking several at a time. In a moment, I heard the street door open and slam shut. I was alone in the haunted house. Then, I saw it. How shall I tell you what it was like? It was a darkness, shaping itself forth from the air in very undefined outline. I cannot say it was a human form, and yet it had more resemblance to a human form than anything else. As it stood, its dimensions seemed gigantic, the summit nearly reaching the ceiling. As I stared, I thought that I distinguished two eyes looking down on me from the boiling air. I tried to speak, but could not. I could only think to myself, is this fear? Is this fear? I tried to move, but could not. I felt as if I were weighted down by an irresistible force. Opposed to my will was another, far superior. My fear now became horror, horror that no words can convey. Still, I retained pride. And if not pride, then courage. For in my mind I said, this is horror, but it is not fear. Unless I fear, I cannot be harmed. With a great deal of effort, I reached my hand out toward the dagger on the table. But as I did, I felt a strange shock on my arm and shoulder, and I was powerless. And now the light slowly began to wane from the candles. The same was happening with the fire. In a moment, the room was in utter darkness, and my terror reached a climax. And wonder of wonders, I broke forth with the words, I do not fear. My soul does not fear. With that, I found the strength to leap from the bed and rush to the window and throw back the curtains and fling open the shutters, for my first thought was, light! As the bright moonlight flooded into the room, I felt a joy that almost compensated for the previous terror. Then came the same measured knocks I had heard before. The entire room began to vibrate. A chair advanced itself from the far wall to the table, and in it there now grew a shape. It was that of a young woman with long blonde hair, which she was combing. And as she combed, she looked at the door to the landing as if waiting. The shadow on the far wall seemed to grow darker and darker. It also seemed to be waiting. Now from that door appeared another shape, that of a young man in the dress of a century ago. He moved toward the young woman, and as he did, the great shadow struck, boiling down over the two. There was a soft chuckling sound. Then the great shadow whirled away as if in triumph, and there on the floor it left the wispy figures of the young man and woman. As it had been withdrawn, the flame grew in the candles and the fire in the grate. The whole room came once more calmly into sight. The next day, I explained the night's proceedings to the owner, and together we went over the house with a fine tooth comb. In the basement, we found buried back under the bedroom wing a battered sea chest with a crest on it bearing the letters G.H., and in it a sheaf of papers which explained the ritual of the night before. G.H. were the initials of Gideon Hawke, an English pirate who had been in love with the young girl who lived in this home 100 years ago. She refused his attentions and married a proper gentleman of aristocratic birth. In a rage of vengeance, Hawke vowed their death. But before he could arrive in England on his terrible mission, his boat was caught in a storm, and nothing survived but the wreckage in which was found the trunk. A short time later, the young lady and her husband died under very mysterious circumstances. With the removal of the trunk, the nightly reenactment of Gideon Hawke's revenge ceased, and I must say that the house has become a fine, cozy home for myself and my family. As a matter of fact, we still live there.